Mummy's boy. I only wanted to look in on my own sleeping son, but Trev called me a drama queen. Just leave off him for 5 minutes, he said on the landing. I can't stomach a kid of mine being turned into such a pansy. He picked some wax out of his ear with his little finger. I was earning my keep by his age, he said. Oh, I'm sure, I whispered, at 4 3/4. What were you doing, cleaning chimneys? Come to bed, you stupid mare, he said. I heard our mattress creak as he settled in. Come on, Dawn, he shouted through. Ryan sighed and turned over. I straightened his Bob the Builder duvet and tried to blow the pale little hairs off his neck without waking him. Trev had taken him to the barber's that afternoon. Need a big boy's haircut for big school, mate, Trev had said. The barber had used clippers. It's a number two, Mum, Ryan said proudly when they got in afterwards. The stray hairs were still shedding, and they were making pink marks on his skin that he was rubbing in his sleep. I kissed my own fingertips and rested them for a second on the shorn head. Ryan gripped harder onto Bunny, snuggling his smooth pale cheek into Bunny's one remaining ear. I left his door slightly open and the landing light on. Our bed was freezing. I lay on my back with my eyes open, looking at the anaglypta. Trev rolled over to me, grunting, and fumbled underneath my Donny Osmond t-shirt. His hand was cold too, and his breath smelt of extra strong lager and Colgate. He had a hangnail or something on his big toe that scratched my shin. He rubbed my left boob up and down and played with the nipple. Paedophiles, I said. I couldn't help it. For fuck's sake, he groaned. He took his hand away and turned onto his back too. It's the kind of work they flock to, I said, driving children. I saw a panorama. It's obvious when you think about it, rich pickings. You're putting him on a school bus, said Trev. They police check everyone these days. It's like getting a job with MI5. I should be collecting him myself tomorrow, I said, not sitting in a call centre miles away. Everyone's mum gets them from school on their first day. The teacher will put him on the bus, and Jean will be at the stop to take him off, said Trev, speaking each word separately and very clearly. Or have you got a problem with Jean now, too? I had no problem with Jean. Ryan's been going to her house since he was 18 months. Often he doesn't want to come home. She has 5 grown-up kids of her own. Been there, done that, bought the t-shirt, she always says, which could get on your nerves, but I find it reassuring. One of her daughters is a theatrical agent in the West End, and Jean's always getting free tickets for first nights, especially musicals. She offered to babysit for Trev and me to go, but he said he wasn't bothered. He's tired when he's been driving all day, and he says musicals are for poofters. Jean has a space hopper and a sandpit in her garden, and on Ryan's birthday last year, she hired a bouncy castle for all the kids she minds and wouldn't let me pay. There was always a poor sod at school with a mother like you, sighed Trev. There's always one, calling after him at the school gates not to forget to use his inhaler in football, making him wear a woolly hat when it's cold. Fucking nightmare, Dawn, he said. You won't get any thanks. He's only a baby, I said. He's a boy, said Trev. What do I know, I said. I wasn't trying to be clever. There was Trev, so sure of himself, at his happiest in the cold and wet and dirt, doing what a man has to do. But at the same time, always in the back of my mind was my brother Keith, who dropped dead of a heart attack at 42. The more I thought about him, the more I was sure that his arteries had been clogged up by feelings no one had bothered with. At the funeral, everybody went on about the secondary smoke he'd had to breathe in the pub trade and his liking for buttered salami sandwiches, but all I could think of was how I'd heard him sobbing once, when he was about 11 and I accidentally walked in on him in the shower. And how I'd never thought to ask what was wrong. Trev always goes out like a light, whatever else is happening, but I hardly slept that night. And every time I did get off, I had a nightmare. In one, Ryan was in his old baby seat with no straps, on a rickety bus with filthy windows sucking on a baby's bottle. The driver was facing forward, and all I could see of him was his shiny black leather jacket and the red boils on his neck. I kept jerking awake, cold and sweating at the same time, getting a whiff of Trev's sour breath, then dozing again until the alarm went off at 6. Trev was taking a load down to Yeovil. Half the drivers had recently been made redundant, so he was under a lot of pressure to get there and back for the next job. When we first got together, I used to say it worried me, him driving such a big truck, like a maniac. Sometimes I'd pretend to nag him in the pub the night before, tell him he shouldn't be putting so much away. Really, though, I found it all exciting then. Truth be told, I was proud of the way he held his drink. That morning, I watched him dress in the half light. I giggled at him swearing as he realised he'd put two socks onto the same foot. He hadn't even bothered to change out of the stained vest he'd slept in. Give him his due though, I thought. He does this for us, this early rising and driving all on his own up and down the grey motorway. It's how he knows to do the right thing by us. It's always a relief when I can see things from his point of view. It's very tiring being bitter. I thought about the fuss I make whenever I go anywhere, looking at weather forecasts, changing my mind about what I need at the last minute, the extra pair of shoes and jumper, just in case. I thought, what you see is what you get with Trev. That's what I fell in love with. And it's just as well one of us goes with the flow, I thought, or it'd be climbing the walls time. I wish you could be here, I said, for Ryan's first day. You'll be here more than enough for both of us, he said. Trust me. He leant over to kiss me on the forehead, and I put my hand behind his neck and pulled him to me and gave him a proper wet snog. Shit, he muttered. He plonked down onto the bed and looked at my mouth longingly. He's a red-blooded, give him an inch and he'll take a mile kind of bloke. I used to enjoy that too. I thought I felt stirrings of being able to again. See you tomorrow night, I murmured, putting my index finger over his lips. Can't wait, he said. He kissed me again, then groaned and stood up. He stuffed a change of T-shirt and a biography of Roy Keane into his carrier bag on top of his toothbrush. He winked at me and he was gone. I took a photo of Ryan outside the front door of our house. Daddy wanted a picture, I lied. With his roomy grey school trousers, his navy anorak with its smart shoulder trim, his no-nonsense haircut, and the petrol blue lunchbox turned inwards so you couldn't see the Doctor Who picture, Ryan could have been a friendly plumber who brought his tools round to fix the boiler. I had to blink back the tears that always come so quickly and from nowhere. The rain had cleared, although it was still gusty. We held hands walking through the park, even though it took longer that way. Ryan did a skip sometimes and ran ahead to scare the pigeons. I might have a best friend at my school called Tom or Bruce, he said. You might, and how lucky would they be to have you, I said, swooping down on him in a big hug from behind. He He leant back into me. I kissed the top of his head. Mrs. Watts was standing in the doorway to welcome the children. I'd never met her in person before, but she'd sent a letter to us all in the holidays. "I implore you," this letter had said, "not to put chocolate or sweets into my students' lunchboxes." She looked about 19. She was wearing a dark brown trouser suit and lots of mascara, like somebody going for an interview for the post of personal assistant to a very important man. I explained that Ryan got headachy if he didn't have enough to drink. "Mrs. Watts will definitely make sure that Ryan has his juice," beamed Mrs. Watts. "You don't have to worry about a thing, Mum," she said. "Does she, Ryan?" Ryan looked unsure. Mrs. Watts unclamped his hand from the sleeve of my fleece and firmly gripped it in her own. "Always one that's more nervy than the rest," she said, still smiling brightly but with her teeth a little clenched. "You come with Mrs. Watts," she said, yanking a bit, I thought, on Ryan's arm. "You can be Mrs. Watts's helper with the pegs." Ryan broke free. He ran back to me and flung his arms around my legs. He buried his face between my thighs. "Oh, come on, darling," I said. I tutted at him and smoothed his velvety hair. Then I wrenched him off me and handed him back to Mrs. Watts. He hung his head. All around, children were happily planting kisses on their parents' proud and shiny faces and trotting into the classroom, holding hands in twos and threes. "Trev's right," I thought. "I'm a drama queen, and I've made Ryan into one too." "No need to be a misery guts," I said, as if that was how I always spoke to him. "I'm not a misery guts," he said, shaking his head hard and frowning. He looked at me for a second as though we'd never met. I felt despairing, as though I'd tried to botch him a thicker skin at the last minute, out of a stupid cereal packet, some sticky back plastic, and a couple of rubber bands. Marina brought me a sweet tea from the vending machine and a wadge of loo paper. "Like I always say," I smiled, dabbing my eyes, "there are worse line managers than you." "I just smell the sugar in that," she said, putting the cup down in front of me, "and £2 goes straight onto my waist." She perched herself up on my workstation in her stockinged feet and diverted my calls to one of the other girls. "It's fretting," I said. "I recommend it. I fret all the time, even when I'm asleep, even when there's nothing to fret about. Works just as well as a personal trainer, and it's completely free of charge." Marina chuckled, and I joined in, laughing and blubbing at the same time. She lit herself a cigarette. "Sweetheart," she said, "I wish I could let you go and meet him from school. At least this afternoon. That would have made it easier, wouldn't it? But I don't have the leeway with the shift times anymore. I'm already one down after three. Carol's got to take her mum back to the specialist." "I thought Trev would be home," I said, although even if he had been, he'd probably have let Ryan get the bus. "Trev thinks Ryan needs toughening up." "Bless his heart," said Marina. "Ryan's heart, I mean," she said. "What Trev doesn't understand," I said, "is that Ryan's not like him." "Bit of a delicate flower, Ryan," nodded Marina. "It's probably my fault. Trev says I pander, and I've always worried. All the goings-on while I was pregnant. There was a lot of shouting, crying. I didn't eat right. And Ryan came out so small. Do you remember? And sensitive from day one. Even in the incubator, you could see the slightest thing making him jump." "Don't beat yourself up, love," said Marina. "You've done your best like all of us. And the pressure nowadays," she said. "All this quality time rubbish. Sometimes a kid's just how they are. wouldn't matter what you did. My Jessica's the spit of my Auntie Thelma. I could have taken Jess bowling and read those children's classics to her every waking minute and stuffed her with broccoli till it came out her ears. Wouldn't have made any difference. She flicked ash into the lid of her water bottle. Born disgruntled, I'm afraid, she said. She stubbed her fag out and jumped down from the counter. No rest for the wicked, she said, straightening her skirt and stepping back into her court shoes. Better turn you back on. That switchboard looks like the Blackpool illuminations. He'll be fine, lovey, she said, patting me gently on the shoulder. You'll feel better once you've got through today, she said. It did pop into my head at about 12:30 that Ryan might be sitting all on his own at lunch, with no one to share the extra mini cheddars I'd put in just in case. Then at 2, I suddenly remembered we hadn't practiced finding the armholes in his V-neck like I'd meant to for when they had games. But the good thing about work is there's not the time to dwell. One for you, Dawn, whispered Carol just before she clocked off early. She raised her eyes to the ceiling and shook her head. It's a Cadbury's fruit and, she hissed, just up your street. Transferring you to my supervisor now, she chimed into her mouthpiece. I wasn't Carol's supervisor, but the other girls always passed the tricky ones to me. They said I had the knack. Thank you for calling Securance, I said. How can I help you? For goodness sake, said the woman on the other end of the phone. Don't tell me I've got to start with the whole thing all over again. I do apologise, madam, I said. So you should, she said. You could hear she was already feeling a bit better. It's beginning to feel as though you're running some sort of scam there, she said, but her heart wasn't in it. Recently divorced, she turned out to be. Husband gone off with one of his sales reps, son with special educational needs, and she couldn't get the washer dryer fixed until she knew for sure it would be covered. I was a lot longer on that call than policy, but I thought it was time well spent. One less complaint to head office. When I saw Marina coming towards me, looking serious, I said, sorry, got myself in a bit deep with that one. We're not running a branch of the Samaritans, Dawn, was what I thought she'd say. The new management had her accounting for every second. But she didn't. Instead, she said, call Jean. She was very flushed. She had sweat over her top lip, making her foundation go patchy. What for? I asked, and I put my hand over my mouth. I could see she wasn't messing about. Don't panic, Marina said. The main thing is not to panic. She handed me my mobile. It was a new rule they had to be kept in the office during working hours. Jean and Trevor had Marina's direct line for emergencies. Call Jean, she said again, as urgently as I've ever heard anyone say anything.